This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. When we investigate the scriptures, we're faced with a big problem. We're in dire need of righteousness that we can't achieve on our own. But there is good news. Jesus offered himself as a sacrifice in our place, and we can be made righteous through him. Today, Pastor Sam Horn will explain how we can access this gift through faith as he continues a sermon titled Sola Fide, Through Faith Alone. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
And so it doesn't matter on which side you are, whether you are Luther was standing before his conversion or where Paul was standing before his conversion, you are being crushed under the wrath of God. And Paul and Luther discovered a righteousness that comes from God and not from Moses. Listen to how they talk about it in chapter 3, verse 21. But now we have been under the wrath of God and the just punishment and condemnation of God for three entire chapters. And finally, at the end of the third chapter, but now the righteousness of God has been manifest apart from the law, although the law and the prophets bear witness to it. The righteousness of God that is accessed through faith in Jesus Christ for all who believe. For there's no distinction. It doesn't matter if you are a Luther or a Paul. It doesn't matter if you are a Greek or a barbarian. It doesn't matter if you are a Jew or a Gentile. It doesn't matter who you are. This righteousness, because it is a righteousness that doesn't come from Moses, this righteousness is available to everybody, anybody who believes. And the reason everybody needs it is in verse 23, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and are justified by his grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus. Now, why is that important? Well, when God gives you this gift and he justifies you, he needs to demonstrate his own righteousness in doing so. He needs to make sure the universe understands that what he just did in giving you his own righteousness is actually just. It actually is righteous. And so in verse 25, God put Jesus forward as a propitiation to appease his wrath. That's what the word propitiation means. And what appeased his wrath was the death of Christ. That's the idea of his blood, to be received by faith. And the reason God did this was to display, to show his righteousness, because in his forbearance he had passed over former sins. Verse 26, it was to show his righteousness at the present time so that he might be just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. And Paul was so overcome by this righteousness that had come that he wanted to bring the news of that righteousness to Rome. And that's why in chapter 1, you have this amazing statement in verse 14, I am under obligation to Greek and to barbarian, both to wise and to foolish, and I am eager to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome. Paul said, look, I have a moral obligation. I am a debtor. I have discovered something that is so monumental for the world that I have a moral obligation to carry the news everywhere. I've discovered how a man is made righteous before God, and nobody has thought about this before except the prophets and Moses who talked about it, but we didn't understand it. And now that I understand it, now that I understand that it isn't a righteousness that comes outside of me or from me as I keep the law, now that I understand that it is God's very own righteousness that he gives to me, I need to bring this news to everywhere. I have a moral obligation. And not only that, I'm not just a debtor. I am eager to do this. I am prepared to pay the price to proclaim this good news everywhere. I don't care what it costs me. I don't care how hard it is. I don't care how difficult it is. I'm going to come and bring the news of this amazing reality that there is a righteousness from God, God's very own righteousness that he has made available. I am a debtor. I have a moral obligation to bring this to you, but I'm also eager to do it. And the reason I'm eager to do it is because I am fully persuaded of something. I am fully confident that this good news, this gospel I bring, is the power of God for salvation. And that's the ultimate question Paul and Luther were both after. How is it that a man is made right with God? And at the end of the day, that's the question that your conscience is going to ask you. And Paul said, I discovered something from God, and what I discovered is that there is a righteousness that comes from God. It's his own righteousness, and he gives it as a gift to unrighteous people. And the way he can do that righteously is by somebody propitiating, appeasing his just wrath. And the person who did that was Christ. And the whole thing that I'm shocked at is that the Christ who appeased God's wrath so God could give me his righteousness is the one I have been despising. It's the person I've been persecuting. I went to Moses, and trying to obey Moses, I despised Jesus. When I tried to follow Moses and I tried to understand Moses, I got to the place where I was actually persecuting and murdering people who believed in Jesus. And then I discovered that Jesus was the one who made it possible for God to take his very own righteousness and gift it to me as a gift. That's stunning. That's the gospel. I've used this illustration at funerals before, and I may have used it here a time or two, so forgive me if you've heard this before. But think about what happens when you go to McDonald's or any place. Let's say you and I went out after church, and maybe we went down to Walmart. And we loaded up our buggies, and we came, and I, in a fit of, I don't know, just said, hey, I'll pay for your stuff. And you're like, are you sure? There's a lot of stuff in this buggy. I said, no problem. Just don't tell Beth. I'll pay for this stuff. And so we get there, and they ring it all up, and it's, $400 or so. And I pull out a wad of Monopoly money, and I start laying it out there on the little tray there. I've actually thought about doing this in real life just once. Just once. I think that's all you could do, just once. Well, you know what would happen, don't you? I mean, the lady would be, or the gentleman would look at me and go, what would she say, or what would he say? And I'd say, is there a problem? Well, yes, this is Monopoly money. Well, yeah, this is great money. If it's not enough, I got more. I got sacks of it in the car, and I can bring it in however much you need. Well, is this not good money? Well, of course it's good. I buy railroads with it. I buy houses with it. I buy hotels with it. I get out of jail with it. I do all kinds of things with this money. And that eventually is going to lead to a discovery that Monopoly money is great in Monopoly. But if you try to take Monopoly money outside of Monopoly and use it in Walmart, it doesn't work. And our human righteousness is good only in this realm. It does good when you're kind and when you're gracious And when you do good things to other people, it works in this realm. But when you take it out of this realm and you try to use it to get into heaven, that kind of righteousness is monopoly righteousness. It doesn't work. You need a different kind of righteousness. And that's what Paul is talking about here in verse 21. There is a different kind of righteousness. And the different kind of righteousness doesn't come from Moses, and it doesn't come from me. It is God's very own righteousness. And he takes that righteousness and he gifts it to you. The theological word for that is imputation. He imputes it to you. He gifts it to you. And it is yours forever. That's why Paul is so excited to come to Rome and teach the Romans who had believed in Jesus about the gospel they had believed. In other words, the whole book of Romans is the explanation of this righteousness from God that is being gifted to people. And Paul is looking at people who've been given that righteousness, and he says to them, you have no idea about that righteousness. I'm glad you have it. It's wonderful that you have it, but let me tell you about it. Let me explain it to you, because when I show you how it happened, you will treasure it. You will see it as an amazing gift from God, and you will be transformed by its power. And the way you get all of this is through faith. That's the necessity of faith. And since faith is so necessary, it's the single necessity. It's the one thing that will get us into this realm of grace. We need to ask a second question. Well, what is faith? What is it? We talk about it all the time, but what is faith? What is the nature of this kind of saving faith? And so we're going to have to leave Romans for a minute, and we're going to have to go over to the book of Hebrews. And in the book of Hebrews, we actually have a description and a definition of faith. You know this. Let me read it to you in the book of Hebrews chapter 11, verses 1 and 2. Now faith is, and whatever comes next is the definition. I need faith to get this amazing grace. I need faith in order to access the righteousness that is God's very own righteousness that he's made available. But I need to know what faith is. And so here we have the definition of faith. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And when a person has this, he or she receives a commendation from God. That's what you see in verse 2. For by it, by faith, the people of old, in the Old Testament, received their commendation. And so we could say it this way. Faith is a present, unshakable confidence in God's faithfulness. It is a present, unshakable confidence in God's faithfulness to bring about realities that are not visible to our eye, but they're very real. Just because I can't see the work that is going on in heaven regarding the righteousness of God and the appeasement of his wrath through Jesus, just because I can't see it, what's going on in heaven, doesn't mean it's not real. And so faith is a present, unshakable confidence in God's faithfulness to bring about realities that are not visible to my eye, but that he has promised to bring about. Let me give you an example of this. In the Old Testament, there was a man named Abraham, and he lived his whole life convinced about something. He was convinced. He was fully persuaded that God was building a city that would be his. He couldn't see it with his eye, but he believed it was there. And he spent his life in some of the most amazing cities on the planet. He went to Egypt and he saw the cities that were there. He came out of Ur of the Chaldees, the wonderful beauty of the city that was there. And he didn't settle for an earthly city because he was fully convinced that in the realm where God was, there was a city that God had promised to give him. He was fully convinced of that. And one day his nephew, Lot, stood next to him and said, "Uncle Abraham, we've been traipsing around this sandy place for a long, long time. And you keep telling us that we're going to a city, and we've been to a lot of cities. And every time we go to the city and I ask you, 'Is this the city? Is this the one? Is this the one?' You say, 'No, no, no, this isn't the one.' And Uncle Abraham, it's been years. And I know that you've blessed me. I mean, I know that God has honored you. I can see the incredible wealth that we have. And in fact, our shepherds aren't able to get along because our wealth is so great. And so about those cities, you know, I was talking to Mrs. Lott, and she's kind of wanting a city. And there's five of them down there. And you know, I'm just thinking maybe you keep looking for the city that you think is there. And I'm going to go to the city that I can see is there." And that's exactly what happened. And you know how that story ends. And this is exactly what the writer of Hebrews points to when he says Abraham was fully convinced that the God who promised him a city had a city whose builder and maker is God. And you see that city in Revelation 21 and 22. It is a stunning city. And so when we talk about the kind of faith that saves, the writer of Hebrews says, you want to see what it looks like? That's it. It looks like a wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith. And what it trusts in is God. That's exactly what James talks about in the whole book of James. So you want to know what kind of faith saves? It's that kind of faith. It's the kind of faith that so believes God, that is so fully convinced in the realities that God has said, that they are willing to walk their entire life without seeing the physical manifestation of that. You say, well, Pastor Sam, why in the world are you talking to us about that? Because God has said something to you. God has made a promise to you. And the thing he said to you is this: you are justified. That's a really fancy theological word for you have been made righteous. And you and I are going to have to spend the rest of our life living in an unrighteous world and in a body that doesn't always conform to righteousness. And we are going to have to be fully convinced that the God who declared us righteous has made it so. Because I wake up some mornings and my conscience reminds me, I know you prayed that prayer, and I know you do the church bit, and I know you're a pastor and all, but look at what you did there. Look at that thought you had. Look at that response you gave. Look at, and pretty soon I'm looking at a mountain of sin after salvation. And I'm sitting there going, how can this be if I'm justified? How in the world can this continue to be present in my life if I'm justified? Somebody is not telling the truth. Either I'm not understanding what justification is, or God hasn't justified me. And the faith that saved me to start with is the faith that has to sustain me my whole life. Which brings me really to this important component. This faith that saves us isn't just defined and described. It's actually demanded. If we go back to Romans and you look at chapter 1 and you look at chapter 16, the front and the end of the book, in verse 5 and in verse 26, verse 5 of chapter 1, verse 26 of chapter 16, Paul says, my mission in life is to take this gospel everywhere. I'm supposed to take it to the Gentiles. That's my mission. And here's what I'm after. I want to bring about an obedience of faith. What in the world is he talking about when he says obedience of faith? Well, it could be that he's talking about a faith that produces obedience. That's what James talks about in the book of James. It could be that. But I actually think that in Romans, it's actually this, that there is something that God demands if you're going to be saved. And what he demands is that you stop trying to do the works of Moses and you believe in Jesus. There is something that God commands every sinner to do. And that is to confess. And the idea there is not just to say words, but to embrace as your very own a very different approach to God's righteousness. If you were Paul, you had spent your entire life living out the law of Moses, hoping to get some of God's righteousness. And God says, I am commanding you to turn from that. And I am demanding that you obey the gospel. What does the gospel command us to do? Believe in Jesus. Put your faith in Jesus. There is an obedience that God demands. And this is what he's talking about in Romans chapter 10 when he talks to his own people and he says, you have not obeyed the gospel. This is what he's talking in verse 10:16. You have not obeyed the gospel. The gospel is not an option. It's not like God says, okay, here's Moses, and here's the gospel, and you look, and you evaluate, and you decide. Basically, God says, I'm commanding you to obey the gospel, and you haven't done it. This is Paul's whole point. The reason I grieve for you, the reason my heart is broken over you, the reason I would be willing for God to send me to hell so that you could be saved is that you have not obeyed the gospel. And you have not believed the gospel. Which brings me then to the third thing, and that is this. How in the world do I get this kind of faith? I mean, Paul talks about the fact that you have to believe the gospel and then you go listen to the gospel and there are some pretty stunning things that you have to believe. For example, you have to believe that somebody was actually born of a virgin. You have to believe that. You have to believe that somebody actually lived a perfect life with no sin in any place, in any kind, of any means. I mean, he had a perfect record. You have to believe that. Then you have to believe that he rose again on the third day. You have to believe that. And if I put those three things, if I just put one of those things on any other human and ask you to believe it, you would look at me and you might be very kind, but you wouldn't believe. You wouldn't believe. So how is it that we get that kind of faith? And Paul's answer to the Ephesians is this: it is the gift of God. How do I get faith? Answer, God gives it to me. How does God give it to me? Well, back to Romans in Romans chapter 10. Faith comes by what? Hearing. And the word hearing there is not just what you do with your ears, it's the idea of obeying. Faith comes by obeying. What am I supposed to obey? The word of God. What word from God? The word about Christ. Faith comes by hearing. And hearing through the word about Christ. That's the gospel. God gives me the gift of faith, and it comes from hearing the word of God. And then it comes from the illumination the Spirit of God does in me about that word. And the way Paul talked about it to the Corinthians was this: the God who caused light to shine at the beginning is the same God who has to cause light to shine in your heart.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. If you live locally, come join us for a morning worship service at 9 or 10:45 a.m. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you'd like more information about Palmetto or this sermon series, reach out to radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.